Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Mauricio, Raw tonight featured what I thought was a really good promo from Cody Rhodes. Bonding with the fans, talking about how his battle against Brock Lesnar is similar to the fans' everyday battles against an overbearing boss, or he listed a bunch of things that people face in life, anxiety. He talked about a marathon runner turning the wrong way 10 feet before the finish line, and got the fans to relate to him. He turned around and turned his back to the camera and said, "I want to look the fans in the eye," and they popped and they cheered and they chanted. And I just thought it was a really strong showing from Cody as he officially challenged Brock Lesnar to a rubber match, a tiebreaker match at SummerSlam. Do you agree with me that that was a standout promo and really a standout moment this night on Raw?
To be honest, I kind of slightly disagree.
Good. Tell me about it.
I will agree. It was a good promo. Cody Rhodes, he excels in this. This is his field. He always kills it. I just, the content of the promo, it really didn't connect with me. Cody's promo sometimes feel a bit too manufactured for me. Like, he's trying a bit too hard for me personally, and I just don't kind of want him to shut up.
Well, WWE and Cody are fortunate. It doesn't seem like the crowd is feeling what you're feeling, but the crowds have felt that way with Cody before, including in AEW. And he's managed to avoid that being a problem. But your reaction to him, I think, is my concern with him, but he continues to not trip up. The fans are into him saying the things in the way that he's saying them that isn't working for you, but they are working for the fans. And that's what's fascinated me about this. I thought when he was in AEW, his promos kind of got lost focus, meandered. And he is coming out now what I think is a more refined, focused message. Now, for me personally, I'm kind of like under, you know, I what you're saying rings true to me a little bit. I think there's it's a little heavy-handed and a little too kind of rich for my taste. But I look at the fans reacting, and I appreciate its effect. And I really do think it was very consistent with his character to say, "Brock, you are my obstacle to being next in line, and your obstacle, this obstacle is similar to ones that everybody in this crowd faces." And I thought that note, that line, is what bonds fans to him, because he is, and we get reports of it, he's signing autographs with fans. He really seems genuine. Whether it's marketing or not, it doesn't matter. It's working. I don't think it is just pure marketing. He really does like interacting with the fans. And the fans are buying it in a way that I don't think 10 years ago the fans in a WWE audience would have been. I think more of them would be reacting like you.
Yeah, that's something I can agree with. I'm not the biggest Cody Rhodes fan, but I can't deny that the fans absolutely love this guy. It's just, yeah. While I personally don't like him that much, I have to accept that he's just not for me, but the crowd absolutely love him every single time.
Yeah. And he, you know, he talked, the one thing I was like, did he just say that? Is he talked about the media Q&A, and a reporter asked him, you know, about momentum, and Cody kind of made a comment like, every metric is going my way. And I was like, oh, are we going to get into like, you know, Google searches and merch sales? And do we really want Cody going there? Because I think that's a dangerous place for Cody to go in promos. It's talking about how he does this in order to see the stats afterwards, as opposed to it's what's in his heart. But he turned that around, right? And I think made it work by going, yeah, a lot of things are going my way, except for one thing. In the ring, I got to get past this guy, Brock Lesnar. And so it was kind of Cody's way of saying, I have momentum in the sense that I'm going to acknowledge fans are behind me in a big way, but I still got to get past this guy named Brock. And so he took something that I thought was dangerous territory he was treading in and managed to turn it around into, yeah, you guys can cheer me all you want, but it's not going to matter if I can't beat this guy who is, you know, this impressive beast who very few people are able to beat.
Yeah, I agree. I genuinely like do like how Cody makes Brock Lesnar, who is already a killer always all the time, look like a bigger threat than usual. That's always good. Once again, I don't beyond the Cody promo.
Yeah,
I really haven't been a huge fan of this rivalry, mostly because they really never explained why Brock Lesnar attacked Cody.
Yes.
The night after WrestleMania, and they just kind of went along with it. At this point, I do not expect them to give me an explanation, so I will let that part go. But yeah, that's something that annoys me a little bit when they just let a detail that I think should be more important, they just let it go by.
I agree. That I was hung up on that for a while, and then I sort of did what is a healthy thing to do when you're watching wrestling and you don't get an answer is begrudgingly move on. And I don't know if that will ever be revealed. There's a little part of me that holds out hope that someday they will pay that off with some sort of explanation that they have something in the back of their mind that they still might either for sure or just might bring out on television, which is that it was kind of a secret phone call that Paul Heyman made that Roman Reigns wasn't aware of to have Lesnar help. And not that Heyman and Lesnar were friends again, but it was sort of like, you do us a favor, maybe we can do you a favor type thing. I don't know if they thought of that, if they intended to go with it, and then they decided not to because it is a little convoluted, or if maybe they still have a plan down the line to play that card. I don't sense, though, that there's been any follow-up or any planting of seeds or hints being given that Lesnar and the Bloodline have any connection or rivalry at this point. It really feels like Brock is an independent operator in this and really is just kind of headhunting Cody because Cody's the newer guy who's stealing his spotlight, and Lesnar just wants to take him out because that's who Brock Lesnar is. And I think that's sort of the implication at this point. Obviously, the story has advanced now to just being Cody needs to get past Brock to reassert any chance that he has to get another title shot. And I think that is enough for fans, even though you're not wrong to be going, I kind of wish I got a better explanation at some point.
Yeah, I think it's okay to give up on that plot point. And maybe if they go back to Roman versus Cody, they can go back to explain why maybe that connection between Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar. But if that happens, that will likely be a long time from here. So let's ignore that part.
Yes. And, go ahead. Yep.
No, I don't think I have anything else to add with this promo.
Sure. Yes. So let's pause there and let's introduce ourselves. Let's introduce the show. You are a first-time guest, so we'll get a little details on you, too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, July 10th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, pwtorch.com, dating back to the late 1990s, and the host of various podcasts. Some are VIP exclusive, and some are free for everyone like this one. The other voice you hear is Mauricio Pomerez. Now, correct me, because it's going to take practice. Say your name, because you say it, and this is no coincidence, much better than I do.
Mauricio Pomares.
Oh, that's great. So I'll work on that. You have been covering Raw in right alongside my reports on Monday nights for months and months. When did you start? Do you know right off the month?
I don't really know. It was earlier this year, but
yeah,
I can't remember right now. I think I can check quickly the page, but it's been a while.
Yeah, yeah, and you have you were strong from the beginning, and you've been growing more into it. I know it is a difficult task to cover a 3-hour show live and be typing up details on what happened, and also have time to get your opinion in there. And you've been doing a great job, and we've been trying to line you up on a week that worked to be co-host and make your co-hosting debut. This isn't just your co-hosting debut on this show. It's your podcast debut. And so welcome to the podcast world.
Thank you. It's something I thought about doing for a while, and I just never really got into it. I guess I just sometimes I feel a bit uncomfortable trying to do it on my own. So it's cool to start with a very experienced host.
Well, I hope it's a pleasant and smooth experience for you. Because the first time can make someone nervous or just you're not quite sure how to navigate the format. But so far you're doing great. Tell our listeners a little bit about you. How long you've been a fan? Where you're from? What your first wrestling experiences were that made you a fan?
So I'm a wrestling fan from La Paz, Bolivia. And I've been watching, I started watching WWE all the way back in 2010. I really got into it after watching a lot of Royal Rumble DVDs. It always clicked. Mm-hmm. That show clicked with me before I even knew anything about wrestling. And I just got around into it. I've been watching over 10 years now. I've recently, this year alone, I essentially watch a lot of wrestling this year. Yes, I watch every WWE show, AEW show, New Japan, Impact Wrestling. I try to keep in touch with everything these days. That's about it.
So the Royal Rumble caught your eye. You and Kelly Wells have to talk about that someday because our NXT podcaster Kelly Wells is as big of a Royal Rumble fan as I know. What else has caught your eye? Is it more the in-ring action? Is it the promos? Is it the drama, kind of the soap opera aspect of it? What part of pro wrestling since the Royal Rumble, and now that you've been a fan for as long as you have, what interests you most? Or is it the whole rate? Because, I mean, you just mentioned everything from New Japan to AEW to WWE. So is it everything, or are there certain things that are your favorite thing?
Everything, but I've always been more of an in-ring guy. I always love when there's just two excellent workers that will bring a huge work rate match. But as I've grown, I've also realized that you just can't do only that, the only work rate matches. And that's why I realized that a Royal Rumble, that for example, doesn't really work just as a work rate match. That's a match that lives and dies by the storylines that go in there. And that's why over the last 5 years, I really started to appreciate the storylines, the promos. Sometimes they get a little bit too much, like I said earlier with the Cody Rhodes promo. But yeah, I really started to appreciate why professional wrestling really works as a medium.
And right now, what do you think of the Raw product, the show that you cover on Monday nights for pwtorch.com? What's the strength of the show right now? What's the weakness? What do you look forward to? What do you not look forward to about the summer of 2023 version of Monday Night Raw?
The in-ring wrestling, I think that's one of the strongest points when you have guys like Gunther, Seth Rollins, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, all those quality workers, all wrestling nearly every week, the show is always going to be good in that sense. The 3 hours has been a problem for a long time, so that's always a problem. But when you have workers of that quality, it always helps to make the experience a lot more entertaining. As for the storylines, I'm really starting to like the whole Judgment Day split that they are doing. I don't really care that much for Cody versus Brock, but the match will likely be good, so that's a plus. And that's about it. And also the women's division. That's one of Raw's kind of weakest points, specifically the tag division, since they don't really give them much time at all.
Very good. So I want to invite our listeners to participate by phone call or email. We also have an on-site correspondent who is in attendance tonight who we'll be talking to momentarily. Our phone number, if you're live streaming the show, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on the switchboard and lets us know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Before we get to emails and phone calls at our on-site correspondent, you just mentioned the Judgment Day storyline and the breakup. They had tension at the end of the main event tonight. So it was the Judgment Day against Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and hold on, I'm getting a message here. Okay, good. So he is about to call us up here. So yeah, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Seth Rollins, and Judgment Day won, and then they eyed each other. Finn and Priest eyed each other afterwards, and it looked like there was tension, but they had success. And Priest smiled, and Balor smiled. The tension seemed to break, and they hugged. Is this going to last long, do you think, or is this just a brief pause in the tension between them that will ultimately lead to a breakup? What do you think? What do you think is the pace of the story that they're telling and the destination of it?
Okay, so far when that 6-month dark match started, I thought the Judgment Day were going to lose, and maybe along the next 2 or 3 weeks we would see the breakup of Finn Balor and Damian Priest to set up a match at SummerSlam.
Yep.
Now they won, so what I think will happen is they pinned Sami Zayn, which in theory should get them a tag team title match. I think they'll do. I'm not sure what configuration they'll do, but it will be the Judgment Day versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens at SummerSlam, and that's where they'll break up. They lose. Maybe we'll have Finn and Priest attack each other accidentally, and that's when we'll finally see Finn Balor and Damian Priest turn on each other.
I think that's a pretty good prediction. And I like the idea that they've teased tension, but then they won, so now they're back on the same page. But you can tell, it's not, like, they can sit here and hug, but it doesn't change the fact that both of them have bitter feelings over the other. In fact, Balor is, you know, portrayed as a heel, so he's overreacting in a way that feels out of proportion or misinterpreting things. I like that Priest explained himself a bit during their exchange tonight. They don't always do that in wrestling. They sometimes just, you know, you're kind of like watching. You're like, why don't you just explain that you weren't trying to cost him a match? And they actually let Priest do that to Balor tonight and saying, I wasn't trying to stop you. And then Balor's sort of like, okay, but you still did. So I get the first shot at the title. I'm ahead of you. And then Priest is like, that's fine, because if you don't win, I've got this briefcase. And it was sort of like Balor's like, wait, you think either of us can win, but you're planning for me to lose. And they kind of hovered on his reaction to that. So that undercurrent is there of, yeah, they're friendly and they're trying to stay together. And Rhea Ripley's trying to whip them into getting along. But clearly there's a little passive-aggressive tension still going on between them. And I do think you're right. I think they can come together until SummerSlam, and then that's when they don't succeed, and there's a breakup. I'm curious, because it seems like Damian Priest is going to be the babyface in this breakup. That's certainly the way that's been framed so far. If that's the case, who does Damian Priest cash in against? Like, does Balor beat Seth, and then Priest cashes in to beat Balor? Because I expect Priest will, like, in some sort of match down the line, I assume Priest is going to cash in against a heel. Do you think they would do that? That they would actually have Seth lose to Balor if there's a match, and then it would just be a quick win for Priest? Is that the right direction to go with the new Raw title, or do you see a different scenario for Priest's Money in the Bank?
Huh. That's actually something I didn't really think about. I kind of assumed Priest is going to remain a heel for a while. After he won the briefcase, I just assumed he's going to have that briefcase for a while. And he'll eventually cash it in on Seth Rollins, but somewhere along Survivor Series or in October or November. But then this feud continued. So I'm not quite sure where it's going. I do like the idea of Finn actually beats Seth Rollins, actually wins the title, only for Damian Priest to immediately take it away from him. I think that's pretty cool. I'm not sure. However, that kind of makes Damian Priest look like the heel, and I think so far the presentation has set him up to be a babyface. So I genuinely don't know exactly how this is going to pan out.
It is a challenge when you have a babyface with a Money in the Bank briefcase, but if they do break up Balor and Priest, and Priest is the babyface, that kind of takes away the natural inclination of fans to cheer unless Priest cashes in against Gunther. And it's, you know, later, like you said, you know, down the line in the fall or winter. And so, you know, maybe he teases it, but doesn't do it. I could imagine Balor being antagonistic enough that fans would be cheering him, cheering Priest to cash in against Balor, but they'd really have to. And I think it's smart what you're saying. They'd have to make sure that it didn't come across as a cheap win for Priest, especially if it was the babyface turn at that point. So they'd have to book it in a way where it made sense and fans were on Priest's side.
Yeah, I think the one way they could really make Damian Priest feel like the babyface would be, let's say he cashes in on Finn Balor, the fans are a bit mixed on who is the face or heel, then you have Rhea Ripley and especially Dominic Mysterio turn on Priest for turning on Finn, and that's how you get Priest to be cheered because everyone hates Dominic.
I was thinking JD McDonagh might be involved in this, but he's been off TV for a while other than he lost to Apollo Crews on the main, you know, WWE main event, that TV show, last week. And so I don't really think he factors in, but he's in the back of my mind. You know, they dropped that hint. They might have just dropped the idea entirely, or maybe they're laying low, but he will be a factor in this too, so that he replaces Priest essentially in the Judgment Day. I'm not quite sure of that, but I just throw that out there as something that had been talked about at least a few weeks ago among viewers, that there might be something out there.
Yeah, I completely forgot about JD McDonagh. I more or less forgotten about a lot of the NXT call-ups they did because
yes,
they don't really use them. The Apollo Crews, Odyssey Jones was called up, and we haven't seen him at all.
Yep. And Indy Hartwell has barely shown up, and you know, Johnny Gargano wasn't a recent call-up, but he's been out with an injury for a while, but now he's cleared, and they just aren't utilizing him. So I don't know if that's a Vince McMahon influence or they're just kind of waiting, you know, for the right storyline for him to return. But, yeah, I mean, the NXT draft felt sort of haphazard in the sense that they weren't really ready to push some of the people that got called up. Obviously, Grayson Waller's getting featured heavily, but some people are not, and they are missing. All right, well, let's go to our first call here, and we'll start with Brad in Florida. Brad, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade, how are you?
Doing great.
Great, man. Who is
Say
your
hi
co-host,
to,
by the way?
Mauricio Pomares. Now, you say your name, because I got to keep practicing.
Yeah. Mauricio Pomares.
I feel I'm pretty close for a Minnesotan.
Yeah, you're getting there.
Yes. He covers Raw for PWTorch.com. His old perspective TV reports are run right next to mine on Monday nights and have for most of this year.
And Mauricio, may I ask you, what country are you either from or originally from, or what is your origin?
Oh, I currently live and have lived my whole life in La Paz, Bolivia. All the way, that's South America.
La Paz,
America.
Bolivia.
South America.
The home of the most dangerous road in the world, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are
very
international.
Thank
Brad.
You.
We are international. Yeah.
I love it, man. I love it, man. It's we got to get a premium live event in La Paz one day. I thought tonight's show was honestly kind of. It just felt kind of like silly and repetitive in a certain way with, you know, Rollins coming out 3-4 times and Judgment Day coming out 3-4 times. And, you know, it just felt like it almost felt like we don't have a roster. Like, we just have, you know, these, you know, few groups, and that's what it's going to be. You know, whether it's Judgment Day or Rollins or – it just didn't feel like they're utilizing – as Mauricio just said, you know, it feels like a lot of the roster is just not being utilized. And like I said, like Mauricio kind of said, like, I feel like you could be throwing more people into these interesting situations and doing a little bit more mashing up of characters than what they're doing. And I can't blame this on Vince. You know, I really cannot blame this on Vince. I just feel, and I do feel like the Judgment Day stuff has been fine and good. I don't see any major problem with it. I think Damian Priest has been very good, and I think Finn's been fine. But again, the whole show just felt like Rhea Ripley, Judgment Day, Judgment Day. And even after a while, you could feel the fatigue in the crowd. Like, you felt like they didn't even want to sing Seth's song anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it just, it was too much with that. Do you guys agree?
Rito, what do you think about that?
I kind of see your point, because a lot of these issues have been going on for a while, and Raw does feature a lot of the same talents always at the top. It's always Seth Rollins. It's always Judgment Day. It's always Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. It's always Imperium. The only difference that's really been done in this show for over the last two or three weeks has been, let's say, Drew McIntyre, who returned at Money in the Bank, and I think Logan Paul. I do agree that they don't really use a lot of their roster. Like you said, Johnny Gargano has been here for nearly a year, and him or Indy Hartwell or Candice LeRae, they barely do anything with them. Like, I still enjoy the show, but there's a lot of talent that don't really get featured.
My inclination is I like when they focus on a smaller group of wrestlers if they do a good job with them. And I think they are. I think they're cognizant of wanting to retain viewers. And I think they're worried that if they put too many wrestlers on television who they haven't established yet, that they're going to lose some viewers. But that is a self-fulfilling prophecy, in the sense that if you don't feature other wrestlers in a prominent and strategic and effective way, you end up narrowing yourself down, and then you can end up, as WWE has done over the decades, leaning too much on a small handful of wrestlers. But I think having Imperium and the Judgment Day and KO and Sami Zayn and Matt Riddle and Drew McIntyre now and Cody Rhodes doing what he's doing, and then the Tommaso Ciampa and Miz, which we'll talk about. We got an email on their no DQ match we'll get to in a moment. I think that's a deep enough mix of male wrestlers. And then, you know, it's not a bad women's division in terms of the stars on top, because you've got Trish, Zoe, and Becky. You've got Ronda and Baszler. You've got Raquel and Liv as kind of the top cluster of women's wrestlers who are credible. And then you have, you know, Chelsea Green, who's a strong personality, Sonya Deville, who people have gotten to know, you know, due to her interplay with Adam Pearce and other stuff. And then, you know, just people like Emma, who just kind of show up, and all the women we saw last week who show up briefly for a segment or a match. Katana Chance and Kenny Carter have been a nice addition too, even if they lost in 2 minutes. A little bit of cheating, but it still defined them down a bit. But I think the focus on, you know, four or five or six or seven top acts is good. But I'm nodding along as both of you talk about the risk of having the same wrestlers do the same thing where it starts to feel repetitive, using a ring entrance more than once in a night, having Cody come out to his ring entrance more than once per show can be risky too, even if fans like doing it. So they have to strike that balance, and I think they're trying to, but I'm not as worried as you guys sound about the current depth, but it is an ongoing concern that, you know, there are some wrestlers who are missing. There are some wrestlers who don't have programs. You know, we had Logan Paul and Ricochet, which we'll talk about too, that filled a considerable amount of time. So Ricochet is getting more mic time and the most prominent singles spotlight that I think he's ever had in WWE. So I think there's enough going on to keep things going. But going back to Mauricio's early comment, a two-hour Raw would be better, because then you could do everything you're doing but not have some of those wrestlers exposed multiple times, or as you said, Brad, maybe it gets repetitive doing things that aren't different enough from hour to hour or week to week. Mauricio, do you want to add anything to that?
I think no. I do want to once again, he mentioned he doesn't think Vince McMahon. This is just Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
And what I to an extent, I think I agree, because back in the day in NXT, Triple H had Keith Lee for nearly a year, and he did barely anything with the guy, all the way until NXT became a 2-hour show, and I think that's a mistake that Triple H did even back in the golden age of NXT. Sometimes he has a lot of talent and he just can't feature all of them, and sometimes the talent falls by the wayside. Like now, right now, it's Johnny Gargano. Back then, like you said, Keith Lee was there for over a year and didn't get used until late 2019. So yeah, that's kind of what. Yeah, that's basically it. I do agree that I don't think this is a Vince problem.
Brad, back to you for some feedback.
Yeah, I think that sometimes when, you know, you write these sort of shows, you know, it looks great on paper. Okay, we'll have Seth come out at the beginning with the chicken wings, and then we'll have Seth come out for a fake match against Dominic Mysterio that'll get ruined, and then we'll have Seth do another entrance with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and it just, to me, it's a little too much pushing Seth and the song. You don't want to play it out. You know what I mean? It's like that song. You know, you hear it on the radio once in a while, you love it, but when you hear it 15 times a day, you're like, I don't know if I like this anymore, you know? So, I don't know. But moving on to Cody, you know, Cody does this promo, and, you know, okay, so he comes out there and he says, like, you know, ever since I got here, there's been this ultimate obstacle or whatever. And sometimes with that obstacle, you can't go under it, you can't go over it, you just got to plow right through it, or whatever iteration of that he said. And everyone, I mean, I thought he was talking about, and he goes, and you know exactly who I'm talking about. I honestly thought he was talking about Roman Reigns and the championship. And then he goes, Brock Lesnar. And I was just like, man, like, it almost makes him feel... And I love the guy. I really, really, really like him. And I'm not trying to be, like, disparaging towards him. But it almost makes the character feel like, hey, man, your eye is off the ball. Your whole mission was to come here and win the championship. You should still be talking about it every now and then. Like, you should still be bringing it up. And when he said Brock Lesnar, I'd kind of forgotten about the Brock Lesnar thing a little bit. And when he said that, I was like, oh, man, even my little son said, Roman Reigns, you know what I mean? Like, you know who I'm talking about, you know? So I don't know. I would like to see Cody keeping the narrative of the championship in his sphere. And I think that that's a mistake that he's not doing that. I just think it makes him look weaker and distracted or something.
So I didn't pick up that he was talking about an obstacle from the very beginning. So I'd have to look back, because if he said that, I totally get why you guys reacted the way that you did. I liked that, and I think he did, Brad, say at the end, I have to get past Brock to be next in line. He said, you know, whoever wins the rubber match ought to be next in line. And so I thought that steered it back to the title. I think in Cody's defense, in WWE's defense, they have this challenge of Cody's not on SmackDown, but Roman is. Cody's on a show where Seth is a champion. So you want Cody to infer that or imply, and you want to the point that fans infer, oh, he's talking about the belt Roman holds. But you don't want to talk too specifically about it yet, because he can't challenge Roman for it because of the rules of the draft. So I think he's... I think it's complicated for Cody's character. It's a challenge to go, I want to be next in line, but I got to get past this obstacle in Brock in order to do it. And he uses these kind of vague terms. And he did come out last week and was about to confront Seth, but then got interrupted by Lesnar. So they've planted the seed in the Raw narrative that maybe he is going to go after Seth's title. Doesn't mean he doesn't ultimately want Roman's, but right now he's on Raw. So I think he's intentionally being vague, because there is that issue of, the belt he once chased, he actually isn't even eligible to wrestle for unless he wins the Rumble, in which case he can pick his opponent. Mauricio, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah. The whole Cody Rhodes, Roman, I had a lot of thoughts about this ever since WrestleMania, and I don't want Cody Rhodes to win. After he lost at WrestleMania, I kind of gave up on him. Like it's cool. You didn't finish your story. Too bad. I've moved on. I'm interested in what the Bloodline is doing right now. With how little explanation was with Brock Lesnar feud, that's why Cody Rhodes feels wrong. Everything he did after WrestleMania feels wrong because he didn't finish the story, and now since they are not doing Cody versus Roman at SummerSlam, it feels like an uncompleted story, the whole thing with Roman Reigns, and I don't want them to come back because I've already given up, but I think they'll eventually come back to it, and I don't want to, I don't want it anymore. The whole WrestleMania main event really soured me on Cody Rhodes.
Brad, I'll throw back to you for any reaction to anything that Mauricio and I said.
No, Mauricio, you're great, man. I guess my third and final thing was on Giovanni Vinci being, you know, turned on. And it's like another dissension rank story, which I feel like is like the story du jour, you know, like it's I didn't even mind it, but like, you know, Judgment Day, dissension in the ranks, the Bloodline's always been about dissension in the ranks. And now we have more dissension in the ranks with Imperium a little bit. Now that was not just like Gunther being pissed. Like that really felt like they left him, you know, it really did. Like that felt like Gunther left him. Then Ludwig kind of said, screw you. And he left. And then they showed another shot of Giovanni looking all sad and being alone. I can't imagine where they go with that because Giovanni has been really a complete loser since he's gotten up to the main roster. Other than, do you think there's a chance that Giovanni will play maybe a small part in Gunther losing his title at SummerSlam, where, you know, maybe he, you know, does some move behind his back or something? I just can't imagine where they're going with that because they're clearly not setting up, you know, some new opponent for, you know, Giovanni Vinci versus Gunther. Wow, you know, like, it's not going to be that. What do you think that point of that was? I just really can't figure it out at all.
Mauricio, what do you think?
Yeah, the whole, that Giovanni Vinci, it came out of nowhere to me. Because, yeah, Giovanni Vinci hasn't been booked good since moving to the main roster. But I never really thought anything about it, and all of a sudden they did this whole angle with where Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser are abandoning him, and it just came out of nowhere. Right now, like you said, there is a lot of dissension angles, so I think this will be just a red herring. Maybe they'll tease that no, Imperium is going to break up. Only to then have Vinci remain on Imperium, maybe help Gunther defeat Drew McIntyre, and hopefully after that, actually start using Vinci and Kaiser as a credible tag team. Because so far, like you said, Vinci has been losing everything, and him and Ludwig Kaiser basically lose everything, every tag team match they are put on. I just looked at their cage match page, and they lost a lot of matches.
Yes.
I'm really hoping this is just a red herring to actually establish Vinci and Kaiser as an actual credible threat to the tag titles.
I'm open to that too, Brad. I got to say that this is Gunther with tough love, just trying to establish that he's going to be a bully as a leader of Imperium, but that it's you know, I guess, you know, in his mind, tough love. He's frustrated when they don't perform well. But that is a dimension that adds to that, in theory, is going to add to the intensity. And it is a story that they can tell, that Gunther getting being as hard on them, or Vinci in particular, as he is what should spark Vinci to be better than he has been, and the team to be better than they have been, because their record is so poor this year and in recent months. You kind of need a disruptor to that reputation that they've earned as not a top-tier threat to the tag team titles. So maybe that's where they're heading, Brad. Maybe this is actually going to be framed as a wake-up call for Vinci to take himself to another level, and it took Gunther being somewhat forceful to make that happen. I'm holding out hope it's that, because otherwise I agree with you, and I don't really see a reason to break Vinci up with Kaiser and Gunther unless there's, you know, he needs to take time off to get some surgery or something like that, and they're going to introduce somebody else in his place, and it's sort of like, yeah, we just got to do this in order to get from point A to point C.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, the only thing I'll say to that is we remember, I mean, I'm sure you guys remember when Gunther was very harsh on Ludwig Kaiser. Remember he kind of gave him on SmackDown, you know, that sort of beating in the middle of the ring, the lashes almost with the, you know, the chops.
Oh, yeah.
After Ludwig lost the match. And, you know, you would think maybe Gunther as a monster heel, but I don't really see him as a monster heel, to be honest, but would kind of dish out that sort of punishment on Vinci rather than this sort of walking away from him. But I guess we'll see. I mean, I did find it interesting. And the last thing I'll say is the Alpha Academy thing was very, very funny. I mean, it was very, very funny. And I love that humor. I really enjoyed it. I mean, like, you know, just the Otis with the jacket and the way he's putting it on and the thank yous. And it's just really good. I mean, really good stuff. But Mauricio, very nice to meet you. Wade, thank you for always taking the call. And I look forward to hearing the rest of what you guys got to say. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad. Great contribution. Mauricio, what did you think of our graduation ceremony for Maxine and the comedy from Chad and Otis?
I'm not always a fan of these huge over-the-top and goofy segments, but Chad Gable and Otis, they really have this charm and charisma to really make all this kind of stuff work. This was just a fun segment, and I think Maxine Dupree carried herself well enough to make this segment work, but once again, Gable and Otis, they are excellent at this kind of stuff. Yeah, yes, I remember like a year or two ago when they were feuding with RK-Bro. They did the whole spelling contest, and they also did a graduation segment, and it was all fun. Like, Gable and Otis are killing it with this stuff. I really didn't care for the Viking Raiders interfering because I thought the feud was over, but hopefully it is over next week with their match. But the segment itself, it was really fun. Yes, a lot of fun.
Otis's physical humor was great. The putting the jacket on cracked me up. Maxine's enthusiasm, I think, is infectious. We saw last week how much the crowd popped when she tagged in. And I think they're onto something here. And, you know, a little bit of innuendo, oh, take off your robe. And then, you know, she just had a wrestling singlet underneath. But, you know, that got a pop from the crowd when they were going to do that. I mean, I was fine with the Raiders and Valhalla coming out just to set up, you know, more heat between the teams and either a mixed tag or whatever. The segment didn't need it. I mean, they could have spread it out and just had a segment without an angle. But I was okay with that. But I do, and I also don't think it overstayed its welcome. You know, sometimes when you do a segment like that, everybody's contributing ideas, and this felt like it was pared down to how long it should be. And I thought there was, like, good judgment in terms of how long they went, because I think there'll be more positive reviews because it didn't – every joke they thought of wasn't put into that segment. All right. So if you're live streaming the show and you want to get in line on the phone lines, you can. The number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. LaMarcus and Kyle are on deck, but we're going to go to Jeff in Buffalo, who attended Raw in person tonight, our on-site correspondent. Jeff, welcome. Thanks for calling. I'm eager to hear what your experience was like at the arena tonight. Welcome.
Hi, Wade. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're on with Mauricio Pomares. Say it again, Mauricio. We're practicing here.
Mauricio Pomares.
Pomares. Yes. So stress the middle syllable in last name. I'm getting there. And he is a first-time co-host with me. So Mauricio and Jeff, say hi to each other. And
hi, Mauricio.
So, and he'll be jumping in on our conversation here too. So, Jeff, first things first. How full was the arena tonight?
I was pleasantly surprised. It was pretty packed. Last time I was in that arena for a WWE event was 2011, and it was pretty close to then.
Wow.
I was following WrestleTix all week, so it looked like it was close to 10,000 tonight.
Yeah, I know Cody talked in his promo about selling out everywhere and all the metrics being good. And boy, the crowd seemed into Cody. Talk about that, Jeff. Talk about who got the best reactions of the night. Like, who was in that top tier? It sounded like Cody and Seth, but I'm curious if Drew or Gable and Otis or whoever. Yeah, so kind of run down that list.
Cody and Seth were definitely 1 and 2. It was a pretty big drop off for third. Actually, I think the table in the Miz Ciampa match got the third best reaction. but Drew was there, Riddle was there. The guy behind me really hated Alpha Academy for some reason. I don't know why.
Wow. How do you hate them?
Yeah, he kept yelling, "You suck," during that segment, the entire thing. So I don't know why he hated them so much. That was kind of one of the highlights for me.
Was there any diminishing return with Seth or anybody who appeared more than once in front of the crowd?
I kind of thought we would for Seth, but he came out before the commercial on the main event, and the music picked right back up before they went on, and we started with the O's again. So there really wasn't tonight.
What was the low point of the show in terms of crowd reaction?
There wasn't much. The women's tag with Chelsea Green and that was probably the Let's Go Buffalo chants kind of started going during that, but that was really the only thing that didn't hold people's attention.
Mauricio, jump in with a question.
Oh, a question. Right.
Any curiosity about Jeff's experience at the show?
So, what was? Wait a second. What was the crowd reaction to, let's say, during the Miss Ciampa match? Was there any special crowd reaction after Bronson Reed interfered, or it was just no reaction at all?
I got excited because, I mean, man's pinned Okada, like, that's awesome. Everybody around me was kind of confused, like, where he came from or who he was, and it kind of put a damper to the end of that match, I think.
And you said the crowd was especially into it. Did you think that they were into it because they liked chanting for tables and it was a wild brawl, or were they into booing Miz or cheering Ciampa?
You know, I kind of forgot. Bills Mafia does love their tables. The Buffalo Bills fans were out in full force, and that kind of might have been the ticket. I don't know, they got into the Big Little Balls chant, so I can't believe that's still a thing.
Oh boy. Would you say that they were into Ciampa? Like, did they know who he was, rooting for him? Was it, or is it more about Miz and the gimmicks?
It was more about Miz, I think. Pretty excited to see Ciampa because I haven't seen him in person, and that was kind of cool for me. But that was kind of disappointing from the crowd.
We have not talked really at all about the Ricochet Logan Paul segment. I just mentioned it in passing as on the show, but we haven't really reacted to it yet. I'm really curious about the crowd and how you felt Ricochet did standing in the middle of the ring and holding court for as long as he did. And if it felt like kind of awkward or smooth, if the crowd was into him or not always into him. I couldn't get a real sense on TV of that. So I'm really curious how that came across, in particular for Ricochet to begin with, but then also talk about the reaction to Logan and if that changed the dynamic at all with the crowd.
I think it was because he did seem very comfortable in the ring for the most part. He tripped over a couple of words, but it seemed like we were with him for the most part. And I don't know if that was specific to him or we would have been listening to anybody who was trash-talking Logan Paul. But once Logan Paul came out, it was pretty much directed towards him. He kind of stole the spotlight, I think.
Logan's quite a bit taller than Ricochet. It was interesting. They just kind of kept them away from each other, Logan on the floor and Ricochet standing in the ring. I don't know if it's because of the height difference, which I don't think should matter, but it crossed my mind maybe they didn't want that to be prominent, or if it was just to set up the Ricochet running flip dive, which obviously was one of the points where Ricochet was able to shine, because you know that's more his strength. Yes. And what he and people who have booked him lean on more than his talking. Did it seem like the segment overstayed its welcome at all? Did it seem like it clicked and made fans want to see the match more?
I don't think it overstayed its welcome. I think it did a good job building towards an eventual match. I will say when Ricochet did the flip out of the ring and Logan kind of hit a good line of, see, it's just a TikTok. Like, but I thought that was overall a pretty decent segment.
Were the fans shocked that Becky Lynch lost?
I think so. It kind of came out of – it kind of ended quickly. So it kind of felt like there was more to that match that could have happened. And that was one of the surprises for me is I haven't really seen Zoe that much. And she was kind of impressive tonight.
Yeah, I think the dynamic of Zoe and Trish is, you know, people are wondering, is this going to work? Does this make sense? But I don't think it's, like, great, but I don't think it's a problem. I think it has potential. And Zoe certainly does. And, you know, having her get a win over Becky, I think it's sending a signal to the fan base in kind of a meta sense. We are serious about her. Like, you can invest in her. She just got a rare pin over Becky, even with a little bit of help, you know, from Trish with the distraction. The reaction to Ronda Rousey coming out and Shayna Baszler, I'm still confused what they're going for here. What did you think they wanted fans to do, and how, describe in the building how fans reacted to Shayna and then Ronda?
Shayna got a pretty decent reaction when she came out for the match. I kind of felt bad for poor Emma in there. But there was a small faint, Shayna's going to kill you before that started. After the match, when Ronda's music hit, I was kind of excited because, I mean, that's a huge star to be able to see. And they just kind of did their thing and it was over and nobody really cared. It was tough.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they
Rachel,
had
what,
like
what
a
did you
real...
think of
the... Oh, go ahead.
Like a clear signal to the fans. The signal to the fans. I don't know, because fans' inclination is to boo Ronda and Shayna's getting in some good lines. That if Shayna was the babyface, fans would be eating up. But it does kind of seem like Ronda's supposed to get cheered, but maybe they're throwing their hands up and going, "Well, that's not going to happen." Mauricio, what do you think of that overall, the Shayna Ronda storyline? And then what did you think tonight about the segment and also the discussion Jeff and I are having here about the crowd reaction?
So about Ron and Shayna, so far, I think they are trying to be ambiguous because the people straight up don't like Ronda Rousey. I think that's been pretty much well established. But before that, they haven't done a lot with Shayna Baszler. So before turning on Ronda, I don't think the people cared about Shayna Baszler. So right now, I think they are playing it ambiguous to see how the crowd is reacting, because even the commentary team are not trying. I don't think they are playing either Shayna is the babyface or Ronda is the babyface. They're trying to be a little ambiguous. So far, I think they should stick up with the Shayna as the babyface, because the people just don't like Ronda Rousey. As for the storyline, I think it doesn't make a lot of sense after Money in the Bank, but at the same time, I don't really like Ronda Rousey, so I'm happy with her putting Shayna Baszler over and then leaving.
Very good.
Mauricio, make Shayna the baby face. Make her cool Shayna from NXT again.
Very good. Jeff, was there anything that happened off air before or after Raw that you can share with us?
Something my buddy picked up that was kind of interesting. Damian forgot the Money in the Bank briefcase before they came out for the six-man. Stagehand ran it down to give it to Samantha Irving. And Samantha Irving is amazing. She is, like, the best ring announcer ever. Like, she adds so much to entrances and just the package in general. But there was a couple of matches for main event, if you're interested.
Yeah, we are. So plug your ears, main event, spoiler-free listeners.
Natalia was the first person to come out of the night, and she got a great reaction. She faced Xia Li, and I don't know much about Xia Li at all, but she kind of dominated and controlled the match, and Natty squeaked one out. And the second match was Indy Hartwell, and she faced Dana Brooke. And Indy stole one thanks to Candice LeRae.
How did the crowd react to those two?
I think I heard a cricket when Dana came out, unfortunately. And people seemed to know who Indy was, which was cool.
Yeah, I was curious about that.
Yeah,
interesting. Anything else?
The better reaction of the two.
Jeff, anything else in terms of the flow of the show? Like, was there anything in commercial breaks that worked or didn't work? And did you just think WWE put on a good production, not just television-wise, but also for the fans in attendance?
Nothing out of the ordinary. The DX cam and the John Cena cam that they have the people doing the chops and the can't see me. The one I've been to a few AEW shows recently, and the one big difference is being able to hear backstage promos at a WWE show is pretty cool. I think Tony Khan needs to jump on that bandwagon. But all in all, they put on a great show. That was a very entertaining Raw for the last 3 hours.
Jeff, anything else you want to share with us about your experience?
Not about my Raw experience. Can I share a quick VIP experience?
That'd be great. Well, I mean, it depends. Is it positive or is it negative? No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
Go ahead.
it's very positive.
Awesome.
Thanks to the torch, I have a lengthy work commute now, but I mean, I get to hang out with Wade and Rich Finn and Todd Martin and all the great VIP analysts. It's well worth every bit of the $9.99 a month. So thank you for that, Wade. Thank you for keeping me up on my long trips, and I appreciate it.
Awesome. I really appreciate you plugging VIP and endorsing it like that. That says a lot to our listeners who might think, do I want to take the leap? Do I want to take the plunge and go VIP? So I appreciate your endorsement, and I'm glad we keep you company on your long commutes.
Like McFoley off the cage, take that leap.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you hopefully another time.
Thank you, Wade. Absolutely. Have a good night.
Yep, you bet. You too. So, yeah, if you want to go VIP like Jeff just recommended, pwtorch.com/govip. That'll give you details on our lineup and how to sign up. You can sign up through Patreon directly using your Apple account on your iPhone or through credit card, debit card, or PayPal through our main website. Lots of options, lots of ways to sign up. We make it easy for you from a technology standpoint with a single click to get the VIP feed going on your iPhone through the Apple Podcast native app and also thus CarPlay. And you can also sign up with Android or iOS using different apps with a unique link that won't require you to enter a username or password or jump through any advanced setting hoops. We got a really cool system set up. Make it easy for you. And then you can hear our free shows with the ads and plugs removed and also a ton of VIP exclusive podcasts all on one feed. Or you can subscribe to separate VIP feeds for separate shows so that you're a little bit more organized and there isn't just too much coming at you all at once. That's pwtorch.com/govip. That also unlocks 35 years of archives, hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s that are just fascinating, and 20 years of our podcasts, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Pros and Torch newsletter back issues, plus ad-free access to our website on mobile and desktop. Lots of benefits. Check it out. Plug now over. Mauricio, let's go back to the phone lines here. If anybody is live streaming and wants to join our conversation, you are invited to do so. 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard so we know you want to be on the show. That is what LaMarcus did from Washington, D.C. LaMarcus, welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hi, Wade. Mauricio. I thought the show was good. I felt it was kind of like, you know, when they go overseas and then like the crew that stays behind, that's kind of what it felt like. With, you know, I think Steph had like 3 segments. I think Rhea had maybe more segments than Steph did. And I was also just around the question. When I think Rhea was talking to Sammy and KO, the fans were chanting something, and I couldn't make out what they're saying. It sounded like they're saying, "We can't hear you," or something, or maybe they're just saying, "We want mommy." But did you guys make out what the fans were chanting?
I don't recall that. Do you, Mauricio?
Okay.
Yeah, not really.
Sorry, LaMarcus.
Okay. No, it's fine. The Cody promo, it's funny. Keith Lee was mentioned earlier, and it brings me to Cody. If wrestlers went to, you know, if different wrestlers went to a particular school to learn how to deliver promos, I'll say Keith Lee and Cody went to the same school, although Cody, I think Cody was a scholar in that school. Not so much. So like they give similar kind of types of promos, but Cody does a better job. I'm not sure if it's one thing. I got used to Cody and appreciate his promos, but did you would you agree with that, or where do you want coming from?
So elaborate more on what you think is similar with Keith Lee and Cody.
It's just, I guess, like the way they sort of phrase things. I don't remember everything Cody said, but just the way, they sort of phrase and deliver their, their word choices and things. In a way, I guess it's kind of more like, like a better word, philosophical, the way Cody delivers his promos.
Maybe a little highfalutin. Little maybe pretentious and pompous. We're trying to use big words and talking in a certain inflection, and it can either work or not work for you. I think Cody pushes it sometimes. Sometimes it looks like he's been, you know, looking up words in a thesaurus to try to impress people with his intellect. And I remember once or twice he ended up using a word wrong or it felt very clunky. And that's why I always think Cody's at risk of losing the crowd. And, you know, why one of the reasons Mauricio isn't fond of him, but I mean, it's working. You know what I mean? Like that, the WWE fans are embracing him, and I do think they feel a real connection, and I think they think Cody is sincere. So even with that, you know, sort of, you know, yeah, highfalutin approach to promos, that I that's what I thought you meant when you said Cody and Keith Lee, but I wanted to confirm it. I do think they both share that, and I hadn't thought of that before.
Yeah,
Mauricio, how about you?
Sorry.
No, go ahead, Mauricio. Yeah.
So I do agree. I never made the connection, but it makes sense. I remember earlier tonight during the show, I read on Twitter, someone compared Cody Rhodes' way of speaking to a reverend. And it just clicked. It feels like he's overly worldly, a bit he's well-spoken sometimes to my annoyance, but that's the vibe I get. He speaks like a reverend, like a bit too positive for my liking. Sentences go for way longer than I think they need to, but like you said, the crowd loves it. I can't deny that.
Yeah. Yep. What else, Marcus?
Yeah. Do you he mentioned Brock Lesnar, or maybe Mauricio, saying that there has been an explanation of Brock attacking Cody, but I feel like the Brock is not like just, but he's, because last week he came out when Cody was about to top himself, and it just seems like Brock is trying to keep Cody from winning a championship, period. I feel like that's sort of, and maybe just Brock, I'm not sure if it's jealousy, Brock just doesn't want Cody to win a championship because of their past history or whatever, but do you think that's probably more or less the motivation for why Brock keeps attacking Cody?
What do you think, Mauricio?
Hold up a minute. Wait a minute. Sorry. All right. Yes, my dog was missing. What was the question again?
Just go ahead in your words, LaMarcus, and kind of rephrase that again for Mauricio.
So with Brock and Cody, Brock came out last week. He's been gone all this time. He came back when Cody was about to confront Seth. So my question was, do you think that Brock's motivation is more or less that he just trying to keep Cody away from winning a world championship? I know that you mentioned that maybe Roman and Paul Heyman have something to do with it, but Brock just may be motivated to keep Cody from winning the championship, period.
That could be a reason. I think in a way it kind of makes sense, but once again, it's the fact that the fact that it happened the night after WrestleMania during that what was supposed to be a tag match with Roman Reigns that makes me think it's that there's genuinely some kind of connection between Brock and Heyman, that's why to this year. But once again, but like they never mentioned it, they dropped the topic. So I don't know. So I genuinely, it could be because he doesn't want Cody to be a world champion. They never explained it, so it could make sense. I've seen some people say like Brock is taking revenge at Cody for not finishing the story, like saying you were supposed to beat Roman, you didn't finish the job, so I'm going to finish you. Something along those lines. But yeah, right now I'm just spitballing ideas as to why Cody and Brock are doing this.
And I think what WWE fans would appreciate is not just kind of letting it fade away. That was a question that they brought up at the beginning, and I think fans are kind of craving a little follow-up on that. And I know Lesnar is hard to corral. You know, it's like it's not like he makes himself storyline-wise available for interviews and Q&As. And so, you know, the storyline is – at this point, we still don't really know. I think what fans don't know is that part of the storyline, or is WWE just hoping we don't think about it anymore? Because maybe they never fully thought it through, or they never were happy with an explanation. They just wanted a Cody Lesnar feud, and they thought, well, we'll just make it a mystery instead of trying to come up with a convoluted reason for it.
Caller, he said that someone brought out Damian's briefcase, right? Because I did notice that Damian didn't walk out with his briefcase, which I thought was very weird. Because I don't think they ever I'm not sure if a Money in the Bank one has ever like walked out without their briefcase before, and it's like,
yeah, that's funny.
You know, like why would this happen? But actually, one question. I guess part with you. Wait, I think on your Dynamite call, you mentioned that. Well, you made a comment about AEW being like a fresher talent or something, or one show is fresher than the other. Between Raw and SmackDown, do you think that that SmackDown is the fresher show compared to Raw, or no? But that's my last question.
Maybe by a little. I think they both feel to me fresh enough because we're post draft, and I still feel like we're just in that first phase of sorting out
post-draft.
The identity of each brand. You know, SmackDown is so bloodline heavy that if you're not into it or testing your patience, which the ratings, we've got our ratings report up on pwtorch.com, putting in perspective how red hot SmackDown is, even compared to some of the first 20 weeks they were on Fox. Like, I mean, they're doing numbers similar to pre-pandemic numbers on Fox right now. It's working, and it's only 2 hours, so there's not a lot of room for a ton of other people to do things. But I think on Raw, I mean, I think the Judgment Day is being written in a way that's inspired by what's been going on in the Bloodline. I think Finn Balor is having a revival of relevance, and Damian Priest is the best I've seen him, and Rhea Ripley is just shining as an alpha in that group, trying to restore order. And Dominic is just, you know, a joy to watch as a heel, getting booed the second he moves the microphone towards his face. And then you got, you know, Alpha Academy and, you know, Miz and Ciampa have a feud going with a backstory. Drew feels fresh because he's been gone for a while. Riddle still a little bit fresh because he was gone for a while too. I mean, I don't have a problem with either show right now when it comes to feeling stale. My argument, you know, about the Collision versus Dynamite is just that I think Collision could use some younger stars as opposed to, you know, kind of looking a bit like a senior circuit. And I'm not against the people they're pushing who are older. I just think you want some youth and some upside, some wrestlers where it's like, oh, this is the beginning of their journey, because that was one of the exciting things with Dynamite. But format-wise, I like Collision more. It's just it's a little bit more laid back without being plodding and less frenetic. So every show, all four shows, kind of have their own identity. But I think Raw and SmackDown are at this point still relatively fresh for me because we're seeing a new mix, and I think they're like I said, with the Judgment Day, they've turned them into a really intriguing group. Marisa, what do you think about that question?
So about Raw, I agree. Raw, it feels like a fresh show. It works. Like, aside from the Cody stuff, which doesn't always click with me, I like a lot of the other stuff, like Judgment Day, Alpha Academy, Imperium. It always fun. SmackDown, that's a show that hasn't worked for me for a while. The Bloodline kills it every week. I was close to turning on the whole thing after WrestleMania, but they turned it around. And it's been the best thing in WWE for a while. Everything else that's on SmackDown, I think it's barely watchable. That's, to me, Raw is the show to watch because to enjoy a lot of things. SmackDown is just the Bloodline show. Everything else, maybe you get a good match between there, but yeah, Raw is the best show in that sense.
All right, yeah. Back to you, LaMarcus.
Yep. That's good. I guess I meant more about newer talent, but no, when you laid out like that, I do see the point of view. It may just be because we're all 3 hours, and that does kind of drag it. But I guess when I watch SmackDown, I feel like SmackDown has more newer talent. Well, post-draft in a way, because, you know, Grayson Waller, you know, the Pretty Deadly, the new women with the fire and done and stuff, but and others, but yeah, that's just my thought. When you said that, this one might have been thinking of for a while. It was like SmackDown just seems like they have more newer talent since the draft compared to Raw, but I guess you're saying. But I have any more questions. I think this is my call.
All right, great. Thanks, LaMarcus. I've been hearing from you. All right, we'll go next to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, welcome. what is on your mind about Raw tonight?
Yeah, so I think I'll kind of mix last week and this week a little bit together, because I realized something different last week when I was there, that I just realized that I feel like Raw is a little bit better than SmackDown right now, is because I think for me there's multiple stuff that's happening on Raw that I like in some respects. Raw's not a perfect show, but majority of stuff I like within New Jersey Day or whatever Becky's doing now, her distressing to be over with. I just think is this more star power that I'm more into for Raw than I'm into, because over a set, this is a Bloodline show, and I'm not here for only one act on a show on a 2 or 3 hour show. So Raw to me is my show personally. So, but for tonight though, what I was really wanting to get into was interested in is really just the women's division itself and how because on SmackDown at least I can see there's stuff that's happening on the SmackDown side that I can say that's going to happen, a triple threat match for the women's championship with Asuka and Bianca and Charlotte, and then the EO Bayley match. I'm sure that's going to be what's going to happen for SummerSlam and the SmackDown side. But for Raw itself, it's like Rhea Ripley is messing around with the tag team champions. We didn't have that again which I would have been okay with if Raquel and Liv were not champions, but whatever, it is what it is at this point. But I am looking forward to the match. I think it'll be a good filler match for Rhea until Becky's free, because you guys, the end games will be Rhea. Becky's really what needs to happen, because they both wrestlers need each other, because this Becky-ish feud isn't working for me. I don't know if they're waiting until Lita comes back. I think I'll start there. Do you think Lita is going to come back the Raw before SummerSlam, because they keep doing this? They keep having Becky in this 2-on-1 thing for weeks now, I guess for a month now at this point. So when do you think Lita's going to come back to help Becky? Because I think that's the end game for SummerSlam's tag team match, I'm guessing.
Interesting. Yeah. Mauricio, what do you think about what Kyle just brought up?
It depends. It kind of depends on what's going to be the match at SummerSlam. If the match at SummerSlam is just Becky versus Trish, I can't see Lita showing up at the last moment to stop Zoe Stark from interfering and have like the happy ending where Becky beats Trish. Maybe next week they're going to say like Becky's going to come out and say I'm gonna need a tag team partner to be there or something like that, and she's going to reveal Lita as her tag team partner. I do think she will play a part at the very least at SummerSlam, because though it's kind of weird that they barely mentioned Lita since Trish attacked her. Like Trish attacked Lita. They lost the tag titles. Trish turned on Becky, and they showed it like for the next 2 weeks during the video packages, and they just completely, like this show, they never mentioned Lita. Last show, they never mentioned Lita. Money in the Bank, they never mentioned Lita. It's like there's a chance they just dropped Lita from the storyline and she just goes back to her retirement.
Kyle, I'm kind of with Mauricio. I think maybe we don't see or hear from her again, but maybe they're laying low because they want it to be a big surprise too. I'm not ruling
Becky can't be feeding with Trish forever. I'm ready for this to end. I was ready for this to end a while ago anyway. I wasn't a fan of this in the first place. But I just think that's going to be the direction, I think, because, you know, there's that. Because I'm watching the rest of this women's division. It's like they really don't care about anyone else but Becky Lynch and Trish Stratus is always stuck right now, because Rhea feels like an afterthought. She's in these meaningful, forgettable feuds with Italia now, of course, Raquel and Liv looks like, because I just think it's so, because, you know, Rhea says she keeps getting in their business. So it's like, okay, well, fine. Well, I don't know. I just feel like to me, I just feel bad for Rhea herself. I've mentioned so many times about Rhea. I just feel like she's just such an afterthought. The Judgment Day, the whole as a group, is fun to watch, but it is too much of them I'm not really all that excited for the Judgment Day right now because they're trying to do something with Dominic, but he's not really in a feud right now. Damian Priest and Finn Balor are kind of going to be in Splitsville, and they may end up having a match at SummerSlam, maybe. I don't know. That's what it seems like to me. But it comes down with Rhea is that I'm watching her every week, and I'm like, I'm just waiting for something to pique my interest with her. And if they're going to do something with her and Raquel, fine. But it's like, it's just, I don't know. What do you think about this thing with Raquel and Rhea, and how you think that's going to transpire in the next few weeks? Since I think it's a filler feud until Becky's free.
Yeah, Mauricio, what do you think of the dynamic there? I thought Raquel stood her ground well and had a good kind of closing line to their confrontation backstage tonight.
Yeah, so. Raquel, I'm a bit real. I was never that huge of a fan of Raquel. I see the potential. I think she's a solid performer, but ever since they called her to the main roster, they really haven't showed a lot of her personality. It's always just been a lot of smiles and showing off her back. I think the match between Rhea and Raquel will be good because I remember they had a really good last woman standing match in NXT. But yeah, it's not a program that excites me for SummerSlam. Like I think they should do something. They should have built Raquel more as a character before doing this match at such a big pay-per-view. Like I wouldn't mind this match for Money in the Bank or Backlash, but for SummerSlam, I think they should have gone for a bigger name.
All right, Doc. Kyle,
yeah,
thank you for anything else.
I mean, yeah, they should have had Becky. I really thought that's what they were going to lead to in the last few months. I had my mindset it was going to be Becky and Rhea for SummerSlam. I just had the mindset, but this whole Trish thing just killed that completely. So now we're stuck with Raquel and Rhea. So that's just where it is. I think now that we get into this for Seth Rollins. I think what's next for him at this point is because I know he has Damian Priest looming and everything like that. I am looking forward to their feud at some point and that should be fun. But in the meantime though, what are they going to do with Seth Rollins heading into SummerSlam? We only know anything that's going to happen so far for SummerSlam. It's still a month away, but. I'm just watching this, like, Seth feels like he's just spinning his wheels. Was the Judgment Day, is it going to do are they setting up another Rollins-Balor rematch for SummerSlam? Is that the direction they're going to do?
Mauricio, who is on your list of potential Seth opponents, or do you think it's just obvious it's one person at the top?
I mean, looking at the roster, it feels like all the big names are already occupied. Like Cody Rhodes, he's going to face Brock Lesnar. Drew McIntyre, he's going to face Gunther. Like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, they're tag titles. They're tag champions. Matt Riddle doesn't really feel like a challenger. Like aside from that, yeah. Finn Balor is the only name that kind of makes sense. Like he technically lost, has the excuse that he didn't lose fairly at Money in the Bank. And during this show, he said that he was not done with Seth Rollins. So I think that's the program that makes the most sense because the rest of the roster is either occupied or is not on the level to challenge for the world title.
Yeah. Hello. We have a new guest on the show. That's okay. It happens here too. I got a puppy too who sometimes interjects his opinions. I think we're looking at Balor or Balor and Priest. I think there's a chance we get a triple threat if Balor and Priest can't get along between now and then. Both of them are throwing their names out there as wanting a chance. And, you know, Balor says, I want to be first. Well, you know, certainly that can change. If Priest says, no, I want to be first. And then Adam Pearce, in a moment of distress, says, you're both in. And we get a triple threat match. And the question is, do Priest and Balor work together? Are they capable of working together? Or will they actually be against work against each other enough that it actually benefits Seth? So that's my other kind of top candidate, Kyle. Because then, if not that, what does Priest do?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the last thing I just wanted to mention was the fact that what was it? I just had in my brain. The Lesnar and Cody Rhodes, this entire it's just out of nowhere for the most part, because you know Cody has been kind of had been dealt a bad hand. It goes really back to his injury. His injury kind of delayed everything or made him kind of rush the way he won the Rumble, the way, you know, everyone assumed that he's going to defeat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. And then this entire Brock feud, this has been just been kind of downhill for him. And now he said it himself. Why is Lesnar attacking him for no reason? So it's just been a wild couple of months for Rose at this point for him. I'm surprised he is super over still. I just think it's because of his song. His song is super catchy. It's super. I was hyped hearing his theme music last week while I was there. So because his theme music is cool. It's cool to listen to and to be there, all that stuff. But I'm just watching him like, okay, well, this feud with Lesnar is really hitting for me. Is not really working for me that much. I mean, they have great matches, but it's just what's the end game fully with this? Is this going to end at SummerSlam? I guess that's my question about that, but I'll leave you with that. They should call. That's my whole thing about Cody. He's like, I don't know.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. Mauricio, what do you think we're going to see at SummerSlam with Cody and Lesnar?
Right. I think they're doing some kind of hardcore stipulation. It's probably going to be no holds bar, no DQ, maybe a steel cage. I've seen some people want to see a dog collar match, which would be cool, but I can't remember the last time WWE did that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think they're trying to do, once again, there are so many things sour me on Cody, but what I think they're trying to do, they're trying to fabricate more adversity to eventually have him become a world champion. I don't know when that is right now. I assumed it was going to be at WrestleMania. And right now, this Brock Lesnar feud, it kind of feels like a placeholder just to keep on feeding on that adversity, more mm-hmm. adversity for Cody, just so his win can be, his eventual title win can be this huge moment, which I think it will be a huge moment, but I think him winning at WrestleMania would have been a bigger moment. But once again, I think I mentioned that the whole WrestleMania thing too many times.
I think Lesnar Cody is a placeholder, but Cody getting to feud with Lesnar, I think strategically for WWE, was a way to occupy Cody with a top star that ideally, I hope, he beats at SummerSlam as a credibility-building, momentum-generating victory over a major name. And that, you know, might have been their strategy in having him lose. I wrote a Keller's Take editorial on pwtorch.com today about this, and that I think it's worked out well because of the conundrum had Cody won, and what the reshuffling of a lot of things that it would have forced that I detailed. So I encourage listeners to check that out and read it and give me feedback. Tell me if you think there's a way that they could have made it work, or make your case, pro or con in terms of what I laid out. But you know, I mean, Lesnar is tough to work a program with. Cody's having to do pretty much all the heavy lifting on promos and keep it going, keep the momentum going on the feud, because Brock, you know, shows up and either beats him up or gets beaten up, but there's not a ton of talking and he's not there, as Cody mentioned, many other weeks. He couldn't be bothered to go to Buffalo, as Cody phrased it. But he said he'll be around next week. So I think it was, I get the motivation, the strategy of having Cody feud with Lesnar, and I endorse it as long as Cody wins and kind of wins with a pretty in a kind of a clear cut fashion. I don't think there should be. I think Cody should look like he was the better wrestler that night. I don't think they should try to have it both ways and try to protect Lesnar in the process. All right, let's jump to an email here from JB in Detroit. We'll wrap up soon here because we're past an hour and a half. JB says, the Miz Ciampa Bronson Reed dynamic is far too convoluted for me. So Miz's initial heavy in Ciampa is attached by his most recent heavy in Reed, all within the span of a few months, with no real explanation as to why Miz had moved from Ciampa to Miz in the first place, and no mention as to why Bronson hasn't been mentioned since. I don't really think creative is doing many favors to either Reed or Ciampa. Mauricio, what do you think about this storyline, Bronson Reed's involvement, the, you know, Corey Graves said, oh, you know, Miz has deep pockets. And once Miz was in trouble, he had, Bronson Reed standing by to make sure he didn't lose to Ciampa. Is that enough? And does that sort of, it's not that it's, and they've made it clear Bronson isn't buddies with Miz, but he's sort of for hire. He's a heavy or a thug for hire. So to me, it doesn't feel it feels actually a little more nuanced than convoluted, but maybe I'm giving too much credit to the storyline. What do you think?
I think for the most part you're right, but I guess my feeling is towards the Miz or what annoyed me here, because I didn't want the Miz and Tommaso Ciampa to be a full blown on feud. I thought when Ciampa came back, he beat the Miz, and he was going to move on to whatever, to something else. But now, and then they actually started feuding, and I really didn't care for it. Bronson Reed's interference does make sense. They established that last year when he came back. So all that part, that checks out. It's just that it doesn't personally do much for me. However, I do think they are doing this whole Miz and Bronson Reed tag team, I suppose, to eventually reintroduce. I seen people think this is the way they're going to reintroduce Johnny Gargano to recreate DIY. I hope that's the case, but I don't know. Maybe that's why they haven't used Johnny Gargano for a while. So it's going to be a shocking moment when Johnny Gargano comes back and helps Tommaso Ciampa and reunites one of NXT's top tag teams.
Well, you are ahead of JB, because his second question is, I truly think the best path for success for both Ciampa and Johnny Gargano is to reunite them in DIY and build them up as a credible tag team in an improving division. Great minds think alike. And yeah, I could see DIY against Miz and Bronson Reed as even a SummerSlam match potentially.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I'm slightly annoyed because during the whole build to Money in the Bank, they did this whole thing with Bronson Reed, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Ricochet, where they were going back and forth because Bronson Reed didn't qualify, but he still beat Ricochet and Nakamura in singles matches. And I thought they were building to this triple threat match that was going to take place after Money in the Bank. And right now, I don't think we're ever going to get that match because Ricochet has moved on to the Logan Paul feud. And Bronson Reed has just moved on to this Miz Ciampa feud, so I'm slightly annoyed at because I was expecting someday we're going to get that match and it's going to be really good, and I don't think we're not going to get that match anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, Don. Number three from JB is, when the count is as slow on an illegal leverage pin as it was in the Carter Chance versus DeVille Green match, it makes the ref look really stupid. I know that the announce team tried to cover for it by saying the ref's perspective was blocked by the angle, but it clearly wasn't when they showed the replay. They should have just skipped the replay. Did that jump out to you at all, Mauricio?
I honestly didn't realize during the match, but I sort of see that point. In every wrestling show, whether it's WWE, AEW, or Impact, there's always going to be one count that feels like the referee could have made the count sooner or faster. It doesn't really annoy me that much, unless it's very egregious. But I didn't even notice it. So this one specifically didn't really bother me.
And then number four, by the time we get there, Rousey-Baszler will be a SummerSlam level quality match, even if it is Rousey's last match in WWE, or at least for a very long time. We talked about that earlier. I reported at pwtorch.com that Rousey and Baszler were kind of in charge is overstating, but the way things have gone was their call. They wanted to feud. They were going to feud sooner, and then it got delayed, and they decided to establish them as a dominant team. And then it kind of came abruptly. Oh wait, they're a dominant team, but they're not in it for the long haul. Now they're feuding, and it kind of came out of nowhere. But it's because Ronda wanted to fight Baszler before she takes time off. So I hope, and I talked about this on the VIP Keller hotline when I went in more depth on this, I hope Rousey puts over Baszler. I think she will, and it'll elevate Shayna to a level that she hasn't been at before because she'll have won the feud with Rousey. Is that kind of where you think things are headed, Mauricio?
I hope. It would be weird if we don't get there. Yeah. But, yeah, I think the plan was probably for Ronda and Shayna to win the titles at WrestleMania, but Ronda was working hard and barely took part of the match she ended up having, so they had to delay their eventual title win, and that's why their title run ended so abruptly. But yeah, I think Ronda will put out of everyone in the roster, Shayna Baszler is probably the name that Ronda is more willing to put over cleanly. I don't know if she'll actually, let's say, top out to the Curry for the clutch, but maybe they'll do something like Ronda Rousey passes out. As long as they don't do like whatever they did during the WrestleMania 35 main event where Becky Lynch sort of pinned Ronda Rousey. As long as they don't do that, it's probably going to be good for Shayna.
And then finally, he says, I know Seth's song is a big part of the live experience, so I understand why WWE is pushing it hard. But when we have to hear the song multiple times, seemingly every week on Raw, I'm not sure how it hasn't become at least somewhat grating to people watching at home. You also hear it in basically every Raw commercial. I'm personally ready for it to go away, but I understand why that likely isn't going to happen anytime soon. As always, love the show and go VIP. Mauricio, how do you feel about the Seth song? Does it annoy you? Do you tolerate it? Do you embrace it? Do you think WWE is handling it well?
I personally like it. But I honestly don't mind it a lot, but I do agree that I've seen more people get annoyed by it. I listen to a couple of podcasts that talk about Raw and wrestling, and there's like a couple of hosts that are flat out annoyed at Seth Rollins that are like I hate his gimmick, I hate the singing, it's so overplayed. So far, it's not really doing that for me. I still enjoy it, but I think WWE. But at the same time, he's a world champion, so it makes sense that the crowd singing are always going to be a big part of the show. I don't think WWE are doing overkill yet, but they can get it. I think they might get there. But who knows? That's the singing, all that presentation is part of the reason Seth Rollins turned babyface in the first place.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, I can't blame WWE for leaning into it when the crowd is so into it. But I mean, as JB points out, when you're sitting at home and it's happening every week and it's the same every week, you're not in the arena. Even people who are sick of it on TV might get wrapped up in it when they go live. And that's a balance WWE has to find is, okay, we know the crowds are really into it, but do we do some of it off air, maybe before the show or during a break, so we're not overexposing it? Or they might just think it's really good TV and the people who are annoyed by it are – you know, that they just accept that some people feel that way, but they think it makes for good television. And I mean, I'm still at the point where I think it makes for good television, but I'm aware that there's people who find it annoying, and it doesn't, you know, I think WWE should be concerned, but not panicked about that at this moment. I do not want 6, 9, and 12 months from now to be having this still be what Seth's doing to the degree that he's doing it. But I don't know how you move away from it either if the live crowds keep acting, you know, the way that they are towards it. So I think they're just kind of probably taking it 1 week at a time.
Yeah, probably. The worst case scenario is you end up turning Seth Rollins heel again and do the
I know.
And we end up with 2019 all over again. Seth Rollins is not over. People are booing him, so we must turn him heel.
Yes, exactly. Well, Mauricio, you did a great job. How did it feel doing your first podcast?
I'm a bit scared. Early on, I really wasn't sure what to expect. Like I've seen and heard tons of podcasts, but this is like, and I've recorded stuff for videos before, but this is the first time I've spoken live. But after a while, I got used to it. But early
yeah.
on, my stomach was doing weird noises. So,
well, I should ask before I wrap up: is there anything from Raw we didn't cover that you've got some thoughts on or want to react to?
Let me quickly check my notes. Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, Drew, Imperium. I mean, there's this one thing that's not really a thing, but that baffled me. They did this video package for Indus Share.
Yeah.
And my thought was, why? Why are we do something with them or send them back to NXT or move them to SmackDown, because they were called up during the draft. They got a couple of squash matches and they stopped using them, and now they're doing another video package. And I'm thinking, what is the goal with Indus Share? It's like they want to keep them strong, but they don't want them to lose to any of the established tag teams, so they end up doing nothing.
Yeah, there is a bit of a start and stop to some of this, especially post-draft. And it does come across like there's not a master plan for some of these things, or sometimes they just back away because they think something isn't working, or something else is working so well that it displaces some other plan that they have. I was fine with the vignette tonight, but as long as it's part of a plan, you know, where it's like, all right, we want to remind you that they're here, but we know we're not just going to throw a match out there again, but we want them in your, you know, on your radar as a tag team that is a threat that can show up and have an impact at any time. And, you know, I thought the production of it and the phrasing of it was fine. It has a vibe similar to, you know, a lot of vignettes, Karrion Kross, Aleister, Malakai Black, that kind of thing. And sometimes that can be overdone or come across a little trite or cliche, but I thought it worked tonight. And it just reminded people, hey, they're still here. You don't have to, on a podcast, start questioning if they're still on Raw. We're here. They're still here.
Yeah, I mean, they are getting more than a lot of the NXT call-ups are getting.
Yes.
I just recently checked a list of all the people that got called up from NXT, and there's like Indy Hartwell, Apollo Crews, JD McDonough, Odyssey Jones, Sion
yeah.
Queen. I forgot he was called up at all.
Yes.
There are so many names that they called up. There is the ones that are free agents, but then again, there's some. Zoe Stark is like the only name that I think has actually done something. Also, Pretty Deadly. They're like the two. They're the two acts.
Grayson Waller too.
Okay, yeah, that's three.
Yep. So we're three acts that really have made an impact.
Yeah. Because Kading and Katana, they're at least getting a bit of TV. Cameron Grimes disappeared.
That's right. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking of him, and that's why, because he disappeared. I thought he got off to a rocky start, so. You know, I don't think they really had a clear idea of who he was, and I don't think he had an idea of who he was supposed to be.
That kind of really annoys me, because he stopped appearing on NXT like late last year,
yeah.
And everyone was expecting, oh, maybe he's going to appear on Survivor Series, he's going to show up at the Royal Rumble, he's something, and we never got him. And when he finally was called up, I was finally, they better have a plan, because it's been 6 months since his last appearance, and his plan was beat Baron Corbin 2 times, and that's it. And
yeah.
He's gone from TV again.
Yeah. All right. Mauricio, thank you. We got to do this again. If you're willing, I'd love to have you back on. This was fun.
You're welcome. Thanks for leading the way during my first podcast.
My pleasure, my pleasure. And I hope people will check out your writing every Monday night at pwtorch.com, right alongside my reports. Are your reports on Raw, details on what happened, your analysis of the segments and matches, and people can get different perspectives. I thought it was cool that we opened up with this differing opinions on that Cody promo to kick off the show and gave two different perspectives. So that's an example of why we try to have two reporters, two reports on the major TV shows, so that we get those differing perspectives. Mauricio, we will talk to you soon and enjoy the rest of your day and week.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thanks to all our listeners, and we'll talk to you next time.